Welcome to the Bulwark Podcast. I'm Charlie Syke. Boy, I was up late last night, so bear with me today. Our episode is brought to you by our friends at Simply Safe, which is interesting because I just installed it at my house a couple of weeks ago. A.B. Stoddard joins us in the studio. Thanks for coming in, A.B. Appreciate it very much.
Thanks for having me, Charlie.
Your ears must have been burning because I was on the Nicole Wallace show yesterday, and she basically framed the entire program around your article that appeared in the Bulwark yesterday about Republicans who might vote to remove Trump from office. So it was like the A.B., let's sit around and meditate upon A.B. Stoddard's piece.
Well, I think Nicole is one of the people in a group of people like that you and I are a part of, Charlie, who are wondering if there is a bulwark, if there is a last wall of people concerned about the rapid change slash erosion we've seen in our the integrity of our government, and our system, the frightening fragility of what we have left, and remain concerned enough to be bold enough to act beyond tribalism and beyond party power and break out of this pack, which is more and more like a cult, to say our job as members of Congress and as senators is to preserve the system and not to make voters happy. It's actually to preserve a separate and co-equal branch. And who are those people that might do it? And I could be dead wrong about the 12 I listed. They just seem to me the only ones left. And I would, and I think, you know, this is a conversation we've all been having with the conclusion of the House investigation.
You are just convinced that there's a pony inside that pile.
I am looking for unicorns, Charlie. I'm trying to believe in Santa Claus. It's Christmas time. I'm trying to remain hopeful. And just because the House Republicans have told us not to, you know, just because House Republicans have shut this down and called it a joke doesn't mean that the Senate Republicans will. They likely will, but we're trying to stay hopeful.
So one of the cardinal rules, I think, of cable television is that you should never answer a question by saying, I don't know.
Right.
You should always have an opinion. But I think I came pretty close to it yesterday in the I don't know camp. So I'm gonna run this by you as well. The, you know, they played the tape of Senator John Kennedy, you know, going full Russian dupe. And, you know, she asked me, you know, what is going on here? Why are they doing this? And I essentially said, I don't know if I said the words, but I was certainly thinking, I don't know. I'm really having a hard time figuring out how a guy like John Kennedy, who has a degree from Oxford, comes off as, and I think they use the term, addled Russian asset. Why do they feel it necessary to go full Devin Nunes? There are ways of dodging this, of finessing this, of rationalizing this without buying into these bat-crap, crazy conspiracy theories. Can you give me some insight into what they are thinking, why they seem to be moving toward accepting the, well, the Ukrainians did it, to some sort of an equivalence to the Ukrainian meddling in the election with the Russian, which is nuts. But why are they doing that? Why do they feel the need to set themselves on fire in this way?
I think that they've made it clear. Senator Kennedy, who, by the way, our friend Quinn Hillier, I don't know if you're friends with him, but he's a Republican and a longtime conservative columnist, worked in Louisiana and Alabama politics, and he wrote a piece for the Washington Examiner that I commend to everyone that filed last night about Senator Kennedy. They were political fellows at Loyola University together in New Orleans in 1990. The Senator Kennedy accent is not even real. The things that he describes about Kennedy starting out as a centrist, then moving right, then moving way left in his political bids to end up where he is today, it's a marvelous read, but it's quite depressing. I fell for the Senator John Neely Kennedy Act. I thought he was completely authentic, would never, ever lower himself to this kind of embarrassment. But to watch him go on Fox News Sunday on Sunday, November 24th, then obviously he must have been teased by someone who means a lot to him, because he jumped on to CNN to walk it back on Chris Cuomo's show within hours, days. Then I think that Trump didn't like that. He liked the Chris Wallace version with the gaslight and not the Chris Cuomo version with the walk back, because Senator Kennedy intentionally went back on Meet the Press this Sunday with Chuck Todd to double down on this, knowing that that would be the subject of conversation. And he did it willingly. And he got an affectionate tweet from the president the next day, as did Congressman Doug Collins of Georgia, who went on Chris Wallace this last Sunday and jumped up and down for President Trump as well, demanded that Adam Schiff be a witness and testify, say the president's done nothing wrong. He also got an affectionate approval tweet from President Trump. I think this means a lot to them. They want to stay in the power circle. They want to have a very super high perch, maybe not Lindsey Graham level high perch, but a high perch in Trump world. And they love that approval, and they know that if they veer, the president is watching all of this television. And if you veer off the Ukrainian gaslight conspiracy, you hurt his feelings. And I think he expresses it freely, that he's disappointed. So the amazing thing about the timing, and to remind the audience here, is that Fiona Hill testified on Thursday, November 21. At that point, the senators or their top staff had already been briefed by intelligence officials about this exact Russian propaganda operation that the Russians were trying to feed into our political debate and our media coverage, that, you know, people on like John Solomon fell for and reported on Fox and in the Hill. And Devin Nunes babbles about, and now even Senator Kennedy. We learned on Friday, the day after Dr. Hill testified in the New York Times, that they had been briefed about this very disinformation campaign. And then his first discussion of it was that Sunday, 2 days later. So it's beyond shameless. We've been informed that they've been informed. Yet they talk about it anyway.
You mentioned an interesting. You mentioned Doug Collins, and this may feel like a digression, but I don't think it is. So Doug Collins, we know what his agenda is. He wants to be appointed to the Senate seat that's being vacated in Georgia. Johnny Isaacson is leaving for health reasons, and interestingly enough, Trump and Trump world have been really pressuring the governor in Florida, Kemp. What is Kemp's first name?
Brian Kemp.
Brian Kemp to appoint Doug Collins to this seat, and kind of amazingly, Governor Kemp is telling them to pound sand. And it, you know, even after a Matt Gaetz Twitter tantrum, you know, warning him, you know, how dare you, imagine that you know better than the dear leader? How dare you substitute your judgment for Donald Trump? Which is an extraordinary cultic moment. But I mean, you know, Doug Collins has done everything possible to ingratiate himself with Trump world. At least we know what his agenda item is. But is any part of you surprised that Governor Kemp is basically saying, I'm the governor of Georgia. The president doesn't tell me what to do. Matt Gaetz doesn't tell me what to do.
Oh, I'm very surprised. It's hard to see anyone with any independence. Brian Kemp has obviously said he's not going to try to run for president one day, or doesn't need to be in Don Jr.'s fan club or whatever, you know, he's decided about having independence from MAGA world. Is it's impressive because it's so rare now. So yes, it is. Sean Hannity, I might add, is also on this issue, that everyone should jump on the governor of Georgia's shoulders about this. It's pretty stunning. But again, and I pointed out in the piece about the senators, I noted the people coming around, trying to close ranks and tout the conspiracy for Trump's affections. Doug Collins, you know, he is just for background, it's fascinating to me. He's a former Air Force chaplain. He's been deployed to Iraq in 2008-2009. He is a lawyer. I mean, he's been a pastor. This is absolutely not the person you thought was going to come to Congress to have their brain melted.
Yeah, and this has been happening with increased frequency. So I want to just go to the heart of your piece instead of working up to it. The heart of your conclusion is that it is vitally important to the future of the republic that a Senate trial not result in a straight party line vote. why you basically are conceding that Donald Trump is not going to be removed. There will not be 20 votes. There may not be 12 votes. But it is, why is it, do you think, vitally important that a majority of the Senate vote to remove him, or at least some Republicans vote to remove him, as opposed to what seems increasingly likely straight party line vote?
Right. Or I gather the thinking is now that they'll find some kind of exit ramp where they try to sanction him by censure. You know, they're going to try to find a middle ground. Trump will not stomach any middle ground. He announced this in Europe hours ago, that he has done nothing wrong and everything's super perfect, as we've been told so many times. And he will not tolerate censure either. So the idea of any dissent is not acceptable. I just think that for every single one of them to just vote no, all three retiring Republicans, Mike Enzi, Lamar Alexander, and Pat Roberts, for everyone to say this is fine, is a permanent normalizing of his conduct. It is actually, I believe, the end of a separate and co-equal branch, legislative branch of Congress, because it permits him not only to violate his oath, abuse his power, attempt bribery, all the things that are impeachable, and that a Congress is supposed to say is impeachable, that Trump is everything the framers feared, but that as a Congress, as a legislative branch with the power of the purse, not only would they then lose their check on the executive to say these are the things you were never allowed to do, but he's taking money, declaring national emergencies, and then hijacking congressionally approved security funds for an ally who's at war, and using them for his political purposes, for his domestic political campaign, demanding investigations in exchange for the funds. So from that point on, Congress will really not have the power of the purse. If we enable President Warren to demand help from foreigners in her elections, but also to use money that the Congress has spent to do that. And so it's sort of several fold.
I think that's
surrender.
Exactly right. Yeah. I mean, at the risk of being excessively geeky, because I was watching an old Star Wars movie the other night, you think about the very first Star Wars movie where they find out that there is a flaw at the heart of the Death Star. This analogy is going to totally break down. Donald Trump has found, you know, whether by reptilian cunning or whatever, he's found the flaw at the heart of our constitutional system. I see this is where it breaks down, because the constitutional system is not the Death Star. But basically, you know, this is a system that assumes a sense of honor, restraint, and respect for constitutional norms. And because if you don't have those, what Trump has discovered in his own blundering way is that the powers of the presidency are nearly absolute and unchecked, right? I mean, the whole balance of power between these three co-equal branches of government is kind of an artifice. I mean, it's been like, it's a more of a metaphor than a reality. So if you have two of the other branches that cede power or shirk their responsibilities, then the presidency really is unchecked. It's, you know, in the Constitution, as you pointed out, I mean, it's not self-enforcing. If Congress refuses to exercise its powers and the courts are, you know, reluctant to adjudicate the differences, that the system kind of breaks down, doesn't it?
Oh, I completely agree. And it's frightening how much we've learned since President Trump was inaugurated, how much it's normative. It's based on norms and behaviors. And as you said, honor. It's based on shame. It's based on sort of adherence to principle and losing. When you lose, you walk away. The jig is up, and you honor the winner's majority or whatever, right? And you shift power, you share power. All these things have worked for those reasons, not because they were enshrined in law. It was because it was what you did. I always like Jonah Goldberg's definition of tradition as basically what's worked, you know, so far. And that is the idea that this was entirely sort of smashable, when all these people would jump on and be willing to degrade it into ashes, is really hard to believe. And then also at the same time for us to realize how many people across the land don't really care about the fact that the Congress represents us. And that if we end up, you know, if we end up with Lord knows who, Mark Cuban or Oprah or whoever, you know, in whatever happens to the presidency, that we need to guard this other branch as representative of us is it's sort of this whole concept has been lost.
So you wrote in the piece yesterday that the universe of possible Senate Republican votes against impeachment is small. Let's walk through the 12 that are at least potentially possible unicorns in this story. But first, let's hear a word from our sponsor. You know, the week after Christmas brings the heaviest caseload for police in some areas. Break-ins spike every year during the holidays because families are traveling, burglars know people have expensive stuff, gifts lying around. What's crazy is that only 1 in 5 homes have any home security, probably because most companies don't make it easy. Other systems can be difficult to use, long-term contracts full of hidden fees, astronomical monthly fees. But SimpliSafe is my choice for home security. In fact, I just installed it in the last couple of weeks. It's comprehensive, professional home security at a really fair price. And right now is the best time of year to get the SimpliSafe security system. For the holidays, you get a huge discount on your security system and a free security camera. It was amazingly easy to set this system up around my house. And I have to say, even though I have 3 dogs, I can sleep much safer and more comfortably knowing that this system is in place. It protects every room, door, and window with 24/7 professional monitoring. If there's a break-in, SimpliSafe can give real-time video confirmation so police can respond up to 3.5 times faster. With SimpliSafe, there's no contract, hidden fees, or fine print. Prices are fair and they're honest, starting at just $15 a month. So go to simplisafe.com/bulwark now to take advantage of SimpliSafe's amazing holiday savings and get a free HD security camera. This offer is for a limited time only, and it's ending soon, so really you ought to hurry. That's simplisafe.com/bulwark to save big and get a free security camera, simplisafe.com/bulwark. Okay, we're back with A.B. Stoddard, who has a piece, the 12 Republican senators who might, if you just squint the right way and are really, really optimistic, might vote to remove the president. So let's go through the names. You point out that the universe is small and it might once at one time have included Ben Sasse, Rob Portman, Pat Toomey, and Mike Lee. They all seem off the table now, don't they?
Yes, completely. Portman's already said that this doesn't seem impeachable. The discussion in town is that Mike Lee is one day up potentially for a Supreme Court seat. And so he's in monkdom and hibernation somewhere, staying beyond silent. Ben Sasse has earned the endorsement of the president in his primary for Senate, which I believe comes in March. And we know was very outspoken in 17 and early 18 and then went mute. Pat Toomey, I think, you know, he has had his independent moments, but will likely go the way of the silent ones. And you know, Marco Rubio, we remember those days, though they're gone. It's especially sort of offensive because I point out in the piece, he's spent a lot of time really studying up on the election interference threat. And he knows a lot about it and he cares a lot about it. But the president's meddling in this election, which is why we can't save this for November. It's why he has to go through this process now, because he's actively meddling in our election, and he has to be, if not stopped, at least punished for it. And Marco Rubio's turning, you know, the other cheek. So,
now, by the way, that is a crucial point.
Yes, that's the point.
This is the point.
Democrats never make,
not retrospective.
Democrats never make this point to voters. They never say the reason we're doing this now is because if he gets away with this, he will be asking for the interference of 5 other nations before the campaign is up. This is a point they never make.
Well, and the fact that the phone call, the famous phone call to the president of Ukraine took place the day after the Mueller testimony, indicates how he reacts to a sense, hey, I've dodged this bullet. I got away with this. What more can I do? You can just imagine what this president will think that he can get away with if, in fact, the Senate does not hold him accountable. You just know.
Completely.
That. Okay. So we go through those people that we would have once hoped would have had a conscience here. That gets us to the Senate Republicans who are the retirees leaving the Senate. There's three of them.
Yeah.
And there's six others who are up for re-election. So this would be...
That gets us to nine. My rebels, yeah. my truly independent-minded are just three. Romney, Lisa Murkowski of Alaska, who is an independent. She has her father's seat. She's been through a lot. I don't think she really cares about Donald Trump pressuring her. She might be in her last term, and I just don't think she's literally free, free of mind. So my third one, who I'm really watching closely, is Richard Burr. Richard Burr is in the Sam Ervin seat, Senate seat, who was the Watergate committee chairman. He has run the most bipartisan, honorable, effective committee investigation of any topic, but it happens to be on Russian intervention in the 2016 election in this crazy, paralyzed, polarized time since Trump became president. He has retained the respect of Senator Mark Warner, his ranking member, and it's incredibly impressive. He's seen all the evidence, and I know that he wants to be protective of Senator Tom Tillis, who's in a very tight race and could lose. The numbers look bad. He could lose even if Trump wins in North Carolina. But Senator Burr is also, I believe, going to look at the pages of history, and he's in his last term.
Okay, but didn't he give an interview yesterday? But where he's sort of,
you know what?
Around?
He did a two-step, and you and I are good at reading through those. He sort of said something MAGA, like, well, the Ukrainians were all in for Hillary. He did not say that they meddled. He said, isn't it the same of the Russians wanting Trump? We know that this is, you know, it's BS, but that they were meddling. That's not what Burr said. So he tried to sort of say something that would make the local Republicans at home happy for another few weeks until I think he's actually releasing another tranche of stuff in early January from his committee. So, yes, it was he did not cloak himself in glory yesterday. He's still on my list.
Okay, so who else? There are the retirees.
And the retirees are NZ Roberts and Alexander. They've been there a really long time. They remember a time, Charlie, when you put your country over party and you put your chamber on the same level as the executive branch. They've lived through Watergate. They've seen it all. So as they leave, they might be thinking more about their grandchildren than the Trump family. But who knows?
Yeah.
I'm counting on them. At least one of them. It's a numbers game, right? Out of 12, could I get four?
All right. So what about the ones who are up for re-election?
So up for re-election is six. So you have Gardner of Colorado, a state Hillary won. Collins of Maine, a state Hillary won. Tillis in trouble in North Carolina, a state Democrats are spending a lot of money in, very energized about. And the Trump campaign is going to have to spend a lot of money. And Tillis is underwater. His fundraising has not been great. He got booed at a Trump rally. He's considered a rhino. He's waffled all around. We'll see. These people that I'm talking about, by the way, who are in big battles, doesn't mean that voting to convict Trump would save them. It's just that if they think they're going down anyway, this is the most important vote of their career.
And yeah, you mean Martha McSally?
Martha
in
McSally
Arizona.
is a combat pilot in the Air Force. She has devoted her entire life to serving the Constitution. If she's going to go down, and she's in trouble in that race, she lost a race in Arizona last year. If you look inside the numbers, Trump is very unpopular in Arizona among pockets of Republicans in key areas. Martha McSally is facing an uphill battle there. The state is looking quite blue. Again, if that's going to be her last vote on the way out the door, interesting. To watch. And then you have Ernst in Iowa, no shoo-in, even though Republicans did okay there in the last election, but no telling she's going to have a rough go. Cornyn in Texas is, obviously the least vulnerable, but Senator Cruz has made the point that while he believes President Trump and Senator Cornyn can win next year, he said at a breakfast recently that I was at, it will be hotly contested, quote unquote. And he made the point, if we lose Texas, that's ball game. That Texas Republicans should be in a panic. I know that they're trying to register a million new voters. Cruz said that the Democrats expanded their turnout by more than 100% in the last election, and that they will do so, you know, that they'll have really record turnout again, and that the Republicans have to fight scared.
The only one that really seems plausible to me is Susan Collins.
And that might be true.
But voting to, and of course, as you point out, voting to remove Trump doesn't save them. It's a matter of legacy. So we have to
Or you stand on the floor and you say, I know that the president's not going to be removed. No one's ever been removed. But this is wrong, and we need to call for censure or some kind of punishment. I mean, if you just give him a clean party line acquittal, that's the epic fail.
So one of the most interesting parts about your article, and I say this as somebody that follows the news very carefully, you run down all of the news developments that have occurred since the end of the House Intelligence Committee.
Which are like some of the worst so far, right?
Exactly. You know, the lawyer for Rudy Giuliani, you know, Courtney Lev Parnas, is saying that Devin Nunes, you know, met in Vienna with the ousted Ukrainian prosecutor. The Washington Post reports there's a series of internal emails scrambling to retroactively explain Trump's actions. ABC reports that Parnas has already provided tapes, audio, and video to the House. A few days later, we find out, and this is like almost in passing, the two White House budget officials resigned in part out of frustration for, you know, Trump's delay of the aid to Ukraine. And as you point out, you know, this parade of news should have been a sobering reminder for potential Senate jurors. There's always more. There will always be more, which raises, you know, two questions. You know, why so many of them have rushed to the cameras to declare Trump innocent. But also, why the House is rushing this process on several levels. I mean, they seem to want to have a vote before Christmas. They don't seem interested in pursuing a court action or subpoenas to people who clearly have more information. And yet, the more we look at this, as you point out, there's so much more potentially there. So why the rush? And is that a smart move for the Democrats, or are they kind of panicking?
Thank you for indulging my favorite topic, Charlie Sykes.
Okay.
Yes, I think that the Democrats' messaging has failed. I think that their whole timing situation is a mess and a huge mistake. We will find out, it's early in the week after Thanksgiving, if there was some kind of material date timing moving consensus once the members were at home. What we knew before the Thanksgiving break was that there were the swing Trump district Democrats were facing incredibly intense advertising. A lot of money from Trump and RNC world being spent on anti-impeachment ads, and that they were sort of wondering if the money was going to be spent on their behalf to push back. So then they heard, of course, from voters and their families, and we'll see if they've actually changed their mind and gotten cold feet. It doesn't sound like it. It sounds like they're trying to dispense with something that's politically unpopular in all the wrong places as soon as possible. I was told there was potentially a vote on December 18th, which is a Wednesday. They are trying to pass USMCA. They earnestly intend to do that. By the end of the year, they are trying to keep the government from shutting down before Friday the 20th. It seems really crazy to me just on that level that week they would be struggling to have an impeachment vote while they were trying to wrap up those other things. It's such a gimme to the Republicans, number one. Number two, Lev Parnas wants to come talk to the Congress. A court is weighing in on John Bolton, who is the linchpin. We should be looking at Mick Mulvaney. We should be looking at Mike Pompeo and how deeply exposed they are. We should be asking questions about why Bill Barr turned down a request from the CIA General Counsel for a criminal referral into the July 25 phone call because he decided it was expressed on a phone call and not in written form and therefore not a real referral. He's involved in this. There's a lot more to come. Rudy Giuliani is a target of an expansive SDNY investigation that involves Russian money laundering. There is the longer that this goes on, the worse it becomes for Trump and the Senate Republicans.
I think that's exactly right. And the faster it goes, the better it is for Trump,
right,
and the Senate Republicans for two reasons. Several reasons. Number one, as we all know, we should have realized by now, our attention spans are so short. And you know, when I was mentioning the stories that you had, you know, had listed, I had to remind myself of those stories. Because, you know, the testimony that occurred a week ago seems like forever. We don't absorb news. Donald Trump depends on the fact that we have a disposable news cycle, that we just move on. So the public hasn't necessarily absorbed all the information. So speed is bad there. Secondly, you vote on December 18th, and then everyone in the world checks out of the universe and goes home for the holidays, right?
Yep.
So if you vote on December 18th, by January 4th, people are going to go, hey, do you remember, was that like last month or 2 months ago or like 6 years ago that the House voted to impeach? It's almost like pushing it under the rug. But as you point out, there is so much other information that is out there, and the drip, 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 the accumulation of information is valuable in and of itself. But also, you never know when there might be that tipping point news, you know, if in fact Rudy Giuliani is indicted or Rudy Giuliani, you know, is found to have been engaging in some sort of corruption. Does that change the dynamic? Does it undermine in a fundamental way Trump's defense or the GOP's defense? And by rushing it, you preclude that possibility.
Right. And you and I had a conversation about this when we were last together in New York, that 3 months ago, the president invited the Taliban to Camp David, and no one remembers
that. Yeah, I know.
I believe that if you held the trial in March or April, no one would remember this on Election Day. It would not be a problem. Senate Republicans are different than House Republicans. They are not representing red districts every 2 years where their only battle is the primary. They have more reverence for their place in history, the institution, their role, and particularly these three I mentioned who are retiring. And then, you know, the independent-minded like Romney and Murkowski and Susan Collins, who's in the fight for her life. And she might, you know, we don't know what she's going to do. But this, they are terrified of how deep and broad this is, how dirty it is, how many people are complicit, including Mike Pence, the vice president, who, even if he wasn't involved, has known about this all along. Rudy Giuliani has been at this since 2018. One of the witnesses, and now I can't remember who because of the mind meld that we're all in, I think it was Yovanovitch, said that Mike Pompeo knew about the Rudy campaign in the summer of 2018 to disembowel her career. So this is this is a spider web that goes everywhere. And we've only seen a tiny bit of the top of it. And so this is what I don't know what a tipping point would be, but I do know that Senate Republicans have, you know, audible stomach pains we can hear from here because they are wondering what the hell the news is going to tell us by the 5th of February.
Well, right before we started the podcast, we were talking about Kim Whaley's piece in The Atlantic, where she basically says, you know, the House leaders are kind of, you know, letting Trump and Trump world off the hook. And she runs this list of subpoenas that have been left for dead. And it's kind of impressive when you realize, you know, this investigation has, you know, just barely uncovered some of this stuff. So, I mean, you mentioned some of the names, you know, White House Chief of Staff Mick Mulvaney, who refused to testify, Robert Blair, top Mulvaney aide, who listened in on the phone call, John Eisenberg,
right,
who is the NSC lawyer.
Yeah.
You know, Michael Ellis, who's his deputy, State Department counselor, T. Ulrich Brechtbuhl, if that's how it's pronounced, was also on the call. Brian McCormick, former chief of staff to Energy Secretary Rick Perry. Rick Perry himself. Russell Vogt, who's the acting director of the Office of Management and Budget. Michael Duffy, the political hack who was put in charge of this, at least temporarily. Charles Kupperman, Deputy National Security Advisor. There's also subpoenas for documents that have remained unanswered and unenforced. Mark Esper, the Secretary of Defense, Mike Pompeo, Perry, Trump's lawyer Rudy Giuliani have all basically blown off the request. None of these witnesses have been subpoenaed to testify before the Intelligence Committee, nor has former National Security Advisor John Bolton.
Oh, the John Bolton is the absolute center of this entire
exactly.
thing.
So her point is there's no reason that House Democrats could not have pursued lawsuits to compel compliance with the subpoenas while at the same time maintaining the brisk pace. Courts can move quickly, but only if they are asked. And so I do wonder if, in fact, you're moving toward a Senate trial and all of these folks are just simply ignoring the subpoenas, et cetera, whether courts might step in and say, no, I'm sorry, you know, in a constitutional impeachment proceeding, we are going to have to act expeditiously. But it is amazing that this process will complete without John Bolton being compelled to testify.
Yeah, I just think that they're really stepping on rakes. While we've been talking, CNBC is reporting a federal appeals court has ruled that Deutsche Bank and Capital One can hand over years of Trump's financial records in compliance with House Democrat subpoenas. So what, I mean,
appeals
there's
court.
Like a million things out there. Rick Gates has just, you know, told us through the Roger Stone verdict that President Trump very likely lied in his answers to in his written answers under oath to Robert Mueller. Does anyone remember this? Like, is this like important? I mean, so there's just this basket of crimes and misdeeds or at least questionable things that they're skipping over because they're panicked that this is unpopular and they need to be done with it so they can pass another 200 bills between January and August that the Senate won't put on the floor.
Or hand President Trump a significant victory, you know, on the trade deal.
Yes,
there is that. I was talking with somebody yesterday who said one of the differences between the Democrats and Republicans is that the Democrats have not made Trump pay a huge political price for his behavior. You know, turn it around and Republicans wouldn't be ratifying a big trade agreement before the end of the year and might not easily vote to keep the government open.
Right.
You know,
right.
It's like if you really want to put screws to this guy, you can really put screws to this guy. But they're not.
Well, so I respect the fact that they do, you know, they are afraid he's going to blow up the real NAFTA if this doesn't work out. But I think they also, you know, they want something that they can say they constructively did in a bipartisan way.
No, so where do you come down on the kitchen sink versus narrow focus of the impeachment proceedings? There's some talk of going back into the Mueller report and, you know, resurrecting some of the obstruction of justice stuff. I am sympathetic to that argument, but I guess I would come down on the stay narrow, but be much more aggressive.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want it to be this narrow because I think that it's without Bolton and Lev Parnas, you know, you're not really telling the full Ukraine story. So I do think that, you know, there's a much fuller story that we need to know. But I do, it was interesting, I was at a breakfast with reporters with Pelosi over the summer, and I asked her, why don't you censure and list everything? Credibly accused of rape, credibly accused of 10 counts of obstruction of justice, unindicted co-conspirator and felony crime, this, that. And she said, are you kidding me? This is long before Ukraine, and this is long, and she was opposed to impeachment. She said, censure is a day at the beach for him. We would never do that. But that would be so hard for Senate Republicans if you did a kitchen sink censure with everything from the Mueller report and everything. If you're just going to go through with articles of impeachment and you want to have a couple of articles, I do understand it needs to be very specific. But to do it without Bolton, to do it without Parnas, to do it without a lot more heat on Mulvaney and Pompeo and Barr, I think is bizarre. I mean, at least they're failing in their messaging because, as I said, they've continued to not tell voters the story of the top officials who've been complicit in this all along, either in their participation in or their knowledge of all of this.
This is so important. By the way, there was a key nugget right near the end of your piece yesterday that if House Democrats bring an obstruction of justice article against Trump, which they will, 14 Senate Republicans will be in the potentially awkward position of having voted in support of the exact same charge for President Bill Clinton. This would be Graham, Wicker, Burr, Portman, John Thune, Jerry Moran, Roy Blunt as House members voting to impeach Clinton, Enzi, McConnell, Roberts, Chuck Grassley, Jim Inhofe, Richard Shelby, and Mike Crapo as senators voting to convict him. I thought that was great. But as you point out, this is just going to be ugly. It's going to be ugly.
That was then, and this
is
now. And we can cue all the videotape of Mike Pence saying, if you put your personal interests before the needs of the nation, that's impeachable. Of course, of Graham saying you had to cleanse the office. You didn't even have to commit crimes to lose your job. I mean, those were the days, right?
They won't even break a sweat.
Different time.
A.B. Stoddard, thanks so much for coming back on the Bulwark Podcast, coming in today. Appreciate it very, very much.
Thank you so much, Charlie.
And thank you for listening to today's Bulwark Podcast. The episode today was brought to you by Simply Safe. I'm Charlie Sykes. We'll be back tomorrow, and we'll do this all over again.